We know very well that when the Jews had to contribute to the Mishkan, they were very enthusiastic about it, and everybody came rushing forward and they contributed the various materials to the point that eventually there was enough and they had to say stop. So it does come as a surprise to us that the Nesim, the leaders of the Shvatim, only arrived at the tail end. And although what they contributed was very important, precious stones that were going to be used in the Choshen, but it is surprising that they came all the way at the end. And Rashi addresses that. The only thing is that when you look at the way in which Rashi talks about this, he actually seems to be more surprised at the fact that when it was time to inaugurate the Mishkan, the Nesim were at the front, then he's surprised over the fact that now with the contributions to the Mishkan, the Nesim were at the back. And this is going to boil down to a question of what is the role of leadership? Is a leader supposed to be one who shows everybody how to behave? Or is a leader supposed to be somebody who encourages people to behave appropriately? Is the leader in the front dragging, or is the leader at the back pushing? And we'll see that one of the really important balance elements that a leader has to have is not to get carried away with himself and to have appropriate bittul, submission to Hashem, in order to be a true leader. All of that emerges from one Rashi on this week's parasha. When the pasuk tells us that the Nesim brought the Avnei Hashoyim, which are the special precious stones, Pirush Rashi, Vanesim Eviu. So firstly, Rashi says that what it means is Omer Rabbi Nosson, how come it is that later on, when it was time to inaugurate the Mizbeach, where each of the Shvatim had to have a representative, their Nasi, bring a korban, as we'll read about in the first few days of Nisan, so how come then the Nesim wanted to be right at the front of the line? And whereas when it was time to contribute to the Mishkan, they were not the first to contribute. So Rabbi Nosson says this was the thinking that the Nesim had. What we'll do is, let's allow the community to donate whatever they're going to donate. Whatever is lacking, we'll fill in. What turned out, so their motivation was, whatever's left at the end, we'll fill in the gaps. At the end, there were no gaps. The community donated everything. Shenema, as the pasuk says, v'amlocha hoisa dayom, that the contributions were sufficient. So Omru Nasi, and then the Nasim said, Ma aleinu lasis. What should we do now? Oh my gosh, they brought everything. So they brought these precious stones that were going to be used in the Choshen. Because of that incident, lekach, therefore, later on, hisnadvu b'chanukas ha-mizbeach t'chila. When it was time to contribute to the Mizbeach, the different karbonis that were going to initiate the Mizbeach, they were there right at the front of the line. Ulefi shenisatzlu mitchila, and because first time around, when it was time to contribute materials to the Mishkan, they were lazy, therefore nechsa os mishmam, therefore there's one letter, the letter Yud, left out of their name in this pasuk, v'anasim k'siv, the word v'hanasim is written without a Yud. So that's what Rashi tells us. Over Pashtus Nireh, apparently what Rashi is doing is, K'mash Kosim Leforshim, as many of the commentaries on Rashi say, Shekavonis Rashi le'yashev as ha'shayla, Rashi wants to address a very obvious question. Mi'ach ha'shenidvas ha'nesim uskeres because of la'achar kol shar nidvos ha'mishkan. When you look in the order of the psukim, and you discover that the Nesim's contribution is listed right at the end, after everything, including even after some of the details of how the women were going to spin the wool of the goats. So Pshat would indicate that if the story of their contribution is the last thing we're told, it must be the last thing that happened. Now, don't try and explain, actually the reason why the Nesim are lost is because the items that they donated were actually lost on the list, both in Hashem's instruction to Moshe and Moshe's instructions to the Jewish people. Because if you look at the order of events, you will see that these elements, the things that the Nesim contributed, which included these precious stones and the ingredients of the Shemen HaMishcha, etc., so that was all presented right at the end of everything. So maybe that's the reason why we're told their contribution is all the way at the end of everything. That cannot be the explanation, Shem Kain, because if that was the truth, first of all, Aleph, Hoya Apostle Vanasim Heviu, Tzorch Lovoi, Miyad Lachar Apostle, Kol Merin Turmas Heviu, Veloy Lachar Apsukum, Cholisha Chachmas Levi, Odeh Tovu, Goymer, Kol Anosh, Mashenos, and Libon, Goymer. So if it was true that the Nesi'im are listed after all the other contributions because what they brought were the last list items, then it would have made sense if after we were told all the other elements that were donated, then we would be told about the Nesi'im. But that's not what happens. The Torah tells us about all the materials that were donated. Then it goes and speaks about the women and how they spun the hair of the goats while the goats were still living. And then it comes back to the Nesi'im. So that's like an emphasis. That almost means to say, we want you to know the Nesi'im are last. Because the fact that the Torah breaks from talking about contributions and starts to talk about what was done with the contributions, and then it comes back to the contributions of the Nesi'im, that tells us we're highlighting the fact that they are very much at the end. And secondly, and then there's an obvious question. I mean, the Torah tells us that every single person who felt the generosity, that they wanted the enthusiasm, that they wanted to contribute to the Mishkan, why do we exclude the Nesi'im from that? Almost as if to say, everybody was enthusiastic. Oh, and then they are the Nesi'im. And as they're moving, from both of those points, it's clear it's very clear that the Torah wants to make a focus on the fact that the Nesi'im brought their donations only at the end of the entire process. Which obviously raises the question, which ostensibly Rashi has to address. So that's the big glaring question over here. Why would the Nesi'im, the leaders of the community, have delayed their contributions till right at the end, after everybody? It seems that the Torah wants us to know that, and therefore we have to ask the question, why? So therefore Rashi has to explain it. He says, the Nesi'im were not as enthusiastic or as quick as they should have been. They were a little bit, quote-unquote, lazy, waiting to see what everybody else was going to contribute, and then only after that coming forward. So that's ostensibly what Rashi's doing. We're surprised that the Nesi'im are last in line, so here was their psychology. Let everybody else have a role to play, and then we'll step in and fill in the gaps. However, this is going to raise a string of questions on Rashi. Three major questions and seven diyukim, nuances in Rashi that we have to examine. We really have to understand that if Rashi's message was simply the Nesi'im wanted to delay to see what everybody else did, and maybe there's a criticism of them, he didn't have to give us as much lengthy detail as he did. So number one, Aleph, Bakushya, Ma ro chule, Ma neger lechan shebichanukos hamizbeach isnadvu bitchila. If Rashi wants to just tell us that in this particular setting, the Nesi'im had a motivation why they waited, why do we have to talk about Chanukos HaMizbeach, which we don't know about yet? It's only coming in Parshas Nosoi. We're not nearly there yet. So why is that relevant to our conversation now that they were first in line at that point? Aren't we here trying to address why in this instance the Nesi'im were not first in line? So therefore Rashi, yes, of course he's quoting Rabbi Nosson, but we know full well that Rashi does not always have to quote the entire source. Why is he addressing something we don't even know about yet, we haven't even learned yet, and which shows that the Nesi'im are at the front of the line, if actually Rashi's concern is why in our story are the Nesi'im at the back of the line? That's a question we have on the nature of Rashi's question. Now we have a question on the nature of Rashi's answer. Beis, batiritzu bir, madua arichas hazborash al nesim yisnadvu tzibur v'chulei negea l'inyonenu. Why really do we have to know that the Nesi'im had a whole way of thinking? Let everybody else step up, let's see what they do, whatever they're lacking, we'll fill in. L'cha'oiro hoyal Rashi dashmeinu v'kitzer es nekudus inyon shatamu l'fisha nesatzlu. Why didn't Rashi just tell us in his typical brief form that the Nesi'im were slower at the donations than they should have been. Nisatzlu, they were, so to speak, lazy. Just tell us that. We don't have to know what they were thinking. We just need to know why they're criticized. Which, of course, brings us to the third question about them being criticized. Be'etzem o'inyan, to the core of the issue here, it seems really strange that the entire reason why the Torah would separate the Nesi'im from everybody else and delay their story of their donation till after everybody else's donations and the beginning of the work of the women, only because the Torah would want to highlight that the Nesi'im were lazy. As we know very well, the Gemara tells us multiple times that the Torah is careful not even to speak badly about a non-kosher animal, certainly not about Lahavdil, the leaders of the Jewish people. So that's really strange, that the whole reason to highlight this point should be to tell us how bad they were. So three major questions on Rashi. Why so much detail in the question, specifically detail about information we haven't yet learned? Why so much detail in the answer and not just tell us simply that the Nesi'im did not behave as they should have? And why would the Torah want to make such a fuss about their misguided behavior? Plus there are a whole series of things we have to analyze in the language of Rashi and in the concept of what Rashi is telling us. In fact, Rashi's entire answer actually makes no sense if you think about it. Alafar is a stira mine obey. The answer that Rashi provides is self-contradictory. Miloshen Rashi came in Shishlim Utsibar es hakoil shenem avam lochos dayom. When Rashi tells us that the Nesi'im had expected that there would be gaps that they would fill, and then it turns out that actually the people brought everything that needed to be brought, and there's even a pasuk to prove it. That's a very clear and obvious message that the people had brought everything that was necessary for the Mishkan. So how does that equate with the fact that they clearly did not bring everything? Because the Nesi'im was still going to provide the precious stones and the unique ingredients of the spices and the Shemen HaMishcha and the Keteres. What's going on over here? You're telling me, very simply, based on a pasuk, that the people provided everything, and then you're telling me a whole lot of things that clearly they hadn't provided. Which brings us from Izeh to the next point. It really doesn't make sense, because when you look at the account, the Torah tells us not only did they bring enough, but there was enough and more, and they had to tell their people, stop, they're bringing too much. So why didn't they actually bring the precious stones and the ingredients for the Keteres and the Shemen HaMishcha? It doesn't make sense. So on the one hand, when you tell me they brought everything, how come there's a list of missing ingredients? On the other hand, if they were so enthusiastic to contribute, why didn't they bring everything? Which then brings us to the next question. Why were the Nesi'im so bothered? They said, oh my goodness, what are we going to contribute over here? And therefore, later on, when there was an opportunity to bring Karbonos to inaugurate the Mishkan, they were first in line because they felt they had completely missed. What had they missed? They had brought critical elements both for the Mishkan and for the Big Day Kahuna. So what are they so upset about to the point that that becomes what drives them afterwards, that they're going to have to be first in line next time around? Number 4. If Rashi wanted to say that the Nesi'im thought, look, let everybody bring their things and then we'll see what's lacking, why does he use such a convoluted expression? Let the community donate what they will donate. Just say, let the community donate and we'll fill in afterwards. Could they could have very simply have said in Rashi's language, whatever's missing we'll complete. Why? It's strange. Also, why does he use the expression, and what they lack, we will complete? You know, the minute you use a language like chesaron, you're implying that it's something that they should have done, but they didn't, and you're implying that something is missing from the list. Why do that? Why doesn't Rashi just say, whatever they don't manage to bring, we'll go out and source and bring? The minute it says Masha Mechasun, it sounds like what they didn't bring, as if it was almost deliberate, or as if there was something missing from their contribution, rather than the fact that they were unable to fulfill their contribution. Also, ma peshet l'shein anasim, ma aleinu la'asois. Also, it's very strange that when they look around and they see that everybody contributed everything they had to bring, why does Rashi say, they said, what should we now do? Why is doing the language? Surely they should have said, what else can we bring? This is a discussion about what do you bring to the Mishkan. So the language should have been, everybody's brought everything. What should we bring? And lastly, why do we have to know who it was who taught this particular teaching in the Sifri? Rashi doesn't usually bring the names. Rashi We know from previous times that we've learned Rashi with the Rebbe's explanation, we know that Rashi only ever quotes the name of the person if that will be helpful to address a more advanced question that a sharp student might ask, either about the psukim or about something that Rashi has said. So why do we need Rabbi Nosson's opinion or name over here? Okay, so to understand all of this, we're going to pick out one other expression, which is actually a strange expression, and that becomes the gateway to our explanation of this Rashi. In order to understand this, let's go back and pay attention to the wording and the word order of how Rabbi Nosson phrased his question. He says, "Ma ro'u nesim lisnadev b'chanukas hamizbeach bitchila?" What did the Nesim see, which prompted them to donate first when it was time to inaugurate the mizbeach? Whereas when it was time to donate to the Mishkan, they were not in the beginning at the front line. So listen carefully to what he's saying over here. If you listen to what Rabbi Nosson is saying, he says, he's not asking why were they last in line at the time of donating to the Mishkan. He's asking the exact opposite. What is the reason why they were first in line to contribute at the time of inaugurating the Mizbeach? Kimuvan gamel shen tirutza shabbi nosen lekach hisnadvu b'chanukas ha-Mizbeach tchila, as is reflected both in the question, what prompted them to be first in line at that time, and his answer, lekach, therefore, they, in other words, that was my question, and here is my answer to that question. I am more surprised by the fact that the Nesim were front in line to donate at the time of the Chanukah HaMizbeach, then I am surprised that they were in the back of the line at the time of Nidvas HaMishkan. The great Chiddush in this story is the fact that the Nesim were the first to contribute to the Mizbeach. And that is a really surprising development, because when we first read Rashi, we were convinced that Rashi was surprised, as you and I would be surprised. Why are the Nesim dragging their feet here? And now it turns out, actually, that's not what Rashi was saying. Rashi was quoting Rabbi Nosson to saying, why are the Nesim so enthusiastic there? Well, why wouldn't they be enthusiastic? Don't you think that's the most appropriate thing of a Jewish leader, that they should be in the front of the line to contribute to the Mishkan? So why are you surprised? And on the other hand, if we really are bothered by the attitude that they adopted at the time of the Chanukah HaMizbeach, whereas the attitude they took here, which was to be last in line with the contributions to the Mishkan, if that's appropriate and that makes sense to us, so then why is Rashi discussing it here? Then Rashi should have only addressed this when we reach Parashas Nosoi and we learn about Chanukah HaMizbeach, and then we say, oh, how come there in Trumas HaMishkan they were last in line and now suddenly they're in the front of the line? How come this question is relevant here in our discussion? It's a good question, is already partway to the answer. That's actually why it is relevant over here. Meaning, by the fact that Rashi, in his commentary here, Dafka includes a perspective on their being the first to contribute to Chanukah HaMizbeach, bo Rashi lo letaretz shema she'anasim evinu itvasnu b'soif hayu machmas atzlus. It turns out that Rashi is not trying to explain why the Nesim appeared lazy here, because of Khan, Shadvas and Adava Lubasef Ali Dan Sim Oisa Seda Han Hoga Har Uya Haroi. Rashi's actually using Parshas Nosoi as leverage to help us understand here in this parsha why it was the correct approach of the Nasiim to be the last in line to contribute. So we've taken Rashi and we've already flipped it from how we initially understood it. We thought Rashi was so bothered as we initially were. Why are the Nasiim apparently lazy? Turns out that's not what's bothering Rashi. He's trying to explain to us they took the correct approach, although it didn't all pan out correctly, as we shall see. In fact, it's pretty clear from Rashi that the biggest question is how come at the time of Chanukah Samizbeach were the Nasiim first in line? Of a signon acher, to say the same thing from a different perspective. As Amaima Omer Rabbi Nosson, Maro Nasim Chul Loi Hebi Rashi Kikushia because of a Pashas Nosoi, Eleketiru Tzubir because of Didan. If Rashi had seen Rabbi Nosson's commentary as a major question against the behavior of the Nasim in our Pasha, he would have put it as a question, but he doesn't. He puts it as a question about Parshas Nosoi, yet he quotes it here because he's using that to illustrate that their behavior here was well-founded, albeit misdirected. So why, in fact, is it appropriate for the Nasiim to be the last people to contribute to the Mishkan? Mevoi Rashi. Rashi tells us that. He tells us, Amru Nasiim. He doesn't just cut to the chase and say they were lazy. He says, no, there was a reason they did it. That was a correct reason. The Nasiim said, Yisnadvu tzibur mashem yisnadvinu mashem echasun onu mashlimi noisoi. Let everybody contribute what they can, and whatever they lack, we will complete. Because that's the role of a leader. A leader is not supposed to be the hero in a flowing cape who gets all the attention. A leader is supposed to be somebody who gets everybody to do what they're supposed to do. So tafkidei shenasi hu l'chol roish lishtadel shebnei Yisrael yasal muta lehem v'rak l'achrezeh l'achshoiv al atzmoi v'inyonov. The role of a nasi is to get the people to do what the people need to do. And then after that, he has the luxury of reflecting on his own spiritual commitment. And we're going to see this with Moshe as the shining example. Kvishav kfar pirsh rashi li'il al aposek v'yerit Moshe min ohor el ha'om. As we saw in Parashas Kisiso, that it says Moshe Rabbeinu went down from Har Sinai to the people, says Rashi, melameid sho'eloi oya Moshe poine lasakov el min ha'or el ha'om. He says very clearly, why does it say min ahar ela'am, to tell us that Moshe did not first go attend to his own matters, but he went straight to the people, from Hashem, straight to the people. Now, derechere nemuven, what's Rashi telling us that we don't already know? Pshita, shemoshe mosem yades ashlichas HaKadosh Baruch Hu libnei Yisrael, leipon atchil lasakov hu, mai kamashmelon. Well, obviously, Moshe is given a mission from Hashem. Obviously, he doesn't go and first have lunch. He goes directly to fulfill the mission. What's the surprise? What's the chiddush? What's Rashi telling us that we don't already know? It's not telling us that Moshe didn't attend to his personal physical needs ahead of his shlichus, and he put his shlichus first. It's saying within the context of the shlichus that Moshe had, part of the shlichus is to convey a message to the Jewish people, and part of the shlichus is to prepare himself to go up again onto Har Sinai. The fact that he had to prepare himself for Matan Torah, which means all the appropriate preparations to be Moshe who could receive the Torah. This is spiritual shlichus that he had to do. Nevertheless, v'afal b'chein, seder anagosa hoya, b'yosin nasi b'nei Yisrael, shetzorch b'nei Yisrael koydim etzmo l'chol. But nevertheless, in spite of the fact that Moshe has a ruchniyastika hachona to make that he can fulfill his part of the shlichus, still, his responsibility as a nasi is first and foremost to the people and their shlichus. Limser shlichus HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'nei Yisrael, l'avtiach shikayim shlichus zoi, it's his responsibility to convey the message he had to convey to the Jewish people and ensure that they would do what Hashem told them. V'rak l'achrei zeh, l'achshoi v'lasakov aruchnim shebeinoi ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu kolel l'achanois of the Matan Torah. And only once that was complete, then he would have the luxury of being able to focus on himself and on his own needs and on his own preparation to be the best conduit to receive the Torah. That's a nasi. And Nasi prioritizes the avoda of the people. So too, our Nasim, who learned from Moshe, who was the best of the best, they applied the same kind of thinking to their leadership. That's why Rashi uses this long language. Their responsibility is to make sure she is nadvut zibur, that the community will contribute, mashem is nadvim, whatever they are capable of contributing. It's their responsibility to make sure that the Jewish people give everything they possibly can. And therefore they say, and whatever they lack, we will complete. They don't say, whatever they don't land up bringing. Because the emphasis over here is that they, as real leaders, genuine Jewish leaders, true Nasiim, it's their responsibility to ensure that the people bring whatever they actually can bring. It's not possible to have a discussion about what they land up not bringing, what they don't get around to bringing. It's our job as Nasim to make sure that whatever they can bring, they do bring. Loyavi would imply that they actually have these materials, but they practically haven't brought them. Anything that they potentially could have contributed, the Nasim would have ensured that they would fulfill their job, which is to get those people to contribute everything they have the power to contribute. But it is possible that certain things they lack. They don't have access to these materials. Something that is not in their possession. In fact, it could even include things which they once did have in their possession, because we know they were extremely wealthy, both from Yetzias Mitzrayim and from the incredible wealth that the Egyptians had adorned their horses, etc., which they picked up at Yamsuf. But for whatever reason, they no longer have it in their possession. They paid for things. We know that there were nomadic tribes who came through the desert. They were able to trade with them. Whatever. Right now, they don't have it. Maybe they invested these things to be able to do mitzvahs that were time-bound. And it no longer is in their possession. That's Rashi's diuk by saying chisru. Things that they now lack. They used to have access. They no longer have access. Says the Nasim, Azayon Mashlim Inoisoi. Whatever used to be part of theirs and they don't have it, and therefore they cannot contribute, we'll source it and we'll contribute. But Pizemavur Gamla Shein Rashi, Kaiman Shishlim Tsibra Sakal Chule, Omni Nasim, Mo Olenu La'asois. Now we get it. Now we get why Rashi says it's not a question of the Nasim saying, well, what should we bring now? Because the things they didn't bring. This wasn't an issue of what they didn't bring. It's an issue of things that were not available. So, ma'aleinu la'asois, what should we do? Ve'loi lahavi, not what should we bring? When they ask the question, what should we do? They're saying, we are the Nasiim. We are the leaders of these people. What response is the appropriate response for us? What are we meant to do as leaders when we reach a situation that the people no longer have certain materials that they could theoretically have in the past contributed? Seeing as the Jews have contributed everything that it was within range for them to contribute, so now as Nasim, we have finished that phase of our responsibility. Now what is our next phase of responsibility as Nasiim? And only at that point could they say, we have completed our shlichus with regards to getting the people to do what they needed to do. Now, what is our shlichus? They look around, they see we need Avnei Shoyim, etc. Let's go out and get them. So at this point in time, it's pretty clear that the Nasiim had the right idea. That's how a Nasi behaves. Your priority is to ensure that your people get to do their avoda in the best way possible, and they did that. And they stepped back to allow people the space in order to succeed, and then only after that were they willing to address their own avoda. Sounds great, it is appropriate, however there's an element that's misguided. Even though the attitude was correct, practically something was lacking. So there comes a moment when the Nesim realize, 1 second, the fact that we were waiting all the way till the end, there's something about it that's not as good as it should have been. There's an element of laziness that crept in, even though our motivation was appropriate and correct. We behaved as leaders are supposed to behave, but a little bit of laziness crept in. And therefore they felt the need to rectify that misbehavior. And that's why Rashi tells us they rushed to be the first to contribute to Chanukah Samizbeach. So we have to ask ourselves, what was wrong? Because after all, they behaved as Nesim should behave. So Rashi tells us. He tells us that what happened was Hishlimu Tzibur Es Hakoil, that the community came forward and they filled in everything. They contributed everything that needed or that they were capable of contributing. As the pasuk says very clearly, that the work of contributing to the Mishkan was sufficient. Hainu, that means Shatzibur Hishlim Kol Anitzach Limlocha Shal Mishkan Dayom Beifin Maspik. So what happened was the contribution of the people was so good that the Nesim are no longer necessary in the process. The moment the Nesim recognized that everything that needed to be done had been done, and therefore their contribution is no longer critical to the Mishkan, which means they suddenly realize we do not have an equal share in the contribution to the Mishkan. We thought that's how it was going to be. They'll do their avoida, and once they complete their avoida, we'll do our avoida, and we'll be on equal footing. They'll have contributed 100% of what they could to the Mishkan, and we'll contribute 100% of what we can to the Mishkan. But now it turns out that it's not that way. It turns out that they were so good at what they did, the people, they contributed in such a powerful way that we are actually no longer critical to the process of the Mishkan, and we're now no longer equal partners. They've actually done the job, and we're some kind of tag-alongs now. They could then, in hindsight, recognize that their contribution was not as it should have been, and their enthusiasm was lacking, and they had a streak of laziness in their approach, which needed to be corrected. So what does that mean? So what happened? The Jewish people came forward and they donated the gold and the silver and all the various materials that had to be used in order to build the Mishkan and in order to make the clothing for the Kohanim. In Ibrahim Shamber Susam Kol Yud Gimel Hadvarim, Kiloy Hoyubiyadam Avne Shem Avne Miluim Bukhule. As soon as the Jews realized, okay, we have gold, we have silver, we have copper, we have blue wool and red wool. And then they suddenly realized we don't have the Avne Shoyim and Avne Miluim, these special stones. So they had two choices at that point to say, okay, we did our best. But they didn't take that choice, they took the other choice. So the fact that the Torah tells us they supplied everything and it was dayom, it was sufficient, that tells us that the minute they realized they didn't have those precious stones, they just contributed more gold and silver so that they would have the funds to buy the precious stones. Now, the Nesim didn't necessarily see that coming. They thought the people would reach a point where they say, okay, these are the materials we have at our disposal. You, Nesim, take over and do the rest. But that's not what happened. They say, we don't have the materials, so we'll make sure we have the cash so that at the first opportunity we can purchase those materials so we don't really need the Nesim anymore. This is what Rashi tells us, that the community completed everything that needed to be done, as the pasuk says that their contribution was sufficient. That means that means that even the materials they were lacking, they had it covered because they had a policy in place that says here's the cash that we could use in order to buy it. That means that they contributed enough money to buy everything that they needed. It's at that point that the Nesim suddenly realized their contribution towards the Mishkan is different to everybody else, because the communities come forward to cover the entire project, either with materials or with funds. All the Nesim can do now is broker the deal to use those funds to get the right stones that are needed. But initially, the Nesim imagined that they would actually be the ones to supply the stones on their expense. So, what the community contributed was essential to the Mishkan, and what the Nesim are now going to contribute is no longer essential to the Mishkan. All the Nesim do in the end is they actually supply the stones, stones that the people could have bought on the open market. So now we have a question, because now it seems that we're actually being quite harsh on the Nesim. So let's understand what's going on over here. If it's true that what the Nesim did was correct, and that is the way a Nasi is supposed to behave, first get the Jews to fulfill their shlichus, and only then can you focus on your own spiritual shlichus responsibilities. So madua nidvu ha-Nesim l'chanukas ha-mizbeach t'chila hefech seda anogah shel Nasi. So why then, when it came time to contribute to the Karbonos, to initiate and inaugurate the Mishkan, the Mizbeach, how come there they were dafka the first in line? Suddenly you're not behaving like a Nasi. Didn't you just say that a Nasi is supposed to be somebody who first prioritizes everybody else's avodah? Okay, we acknowledge that when it came time to contribute to the Mishkan, somehow they slipped just a little bit. I mean, certainly it was not an Avera or any kind of rejection of Hashem. It just wasn't as enthusiastic as it needed to be. Aval harei lo yitoch. It seems very strange that if you're behaving like a Nasi should, but you don't get it 100% right, it seems a bit strange that the way to correct it is to behave differently to how a Nasi behaves, and now suddenly run to be first in line. So you have to then say the fact that the Nesim recognized within themselves that some tiny element of so-called laziness had crept into their minds, that's what prompted them to realize when it comes time to inaugurate the Mishkan, the Mizbeach in particular, we're going to have to do things differently. Suddenly the Nesim realized that generally speaking, a Nasi is supposed to take a back seat in order to push the community to do things of their own accord and to get the value of their own shlichus. But when it comes to the Mishkan, there's something else to consider over here. To build a Mishkan is something that is of the broadest proportions and something that affects every single Jewish person. Why? Because what's the purpose of the Mishkan? To get the Shekhinah into our reality. That's a big deal. This is not a specific area of Shlichus. This is like the whole of Judaism summarized. And that would be a sign that the Egel had been forgiven. And of course, the Egel Hazav affected everybody. So the forgiveness for the Egel Hazav is something that affects everybody. Because this is something so big and so integral to Judaism, yes, it's important that everybody participates. But the most important thing is that it happens as quickly as possible. Then it's 100% true that a Nasi's job, whether it be the Nasi of an individual Shevet or the Nasi of the entire community, yes, it's true that his job is get the people to do what they have to do. But in this particular case, the biggest responsibility that the Nesim had was to ensure that the Mishkan would be up ASAP. Said Anoga, So therefore, even though normally a Nasi should definitely take the approach of, let's see what the people can do, and then we'll address our shlichus, it was not appropriate here. Here, the most important thing was speed. Get the Mishkan made as soon as possible. So, mitzad tafkidom kinesim gufa nida sheba bisha shem tevim in b'nei Yisrael es nidvoy sehem yisnadvo tzivu mashem misnadvim yakdimu v'yaviyot es nidvo samhem k'dei shamishkom yukom behektem oivshori. So normally, the Nasi should say, you do what you have to do, and then I'll think about what my responsibility is. But in this case, it should have happened simultaneously. While the Nesim are rushing the people off their feet to get all the nidavos in, they should have been rushing themselves to get the extra components like the Avnei HaShoyam in. And therefore, when it came time to inaugurate the Mizbeach, which is also a central element of Judaism, now the Nasim realized, yes, a Nasi should typically stand back, but not when it comes to major issues that address the whole of Yiddishkeit, like the Mizbeach. In this case, speed is of essence. We need to be right at the front. But all of this is beautiful and makes a tremendous amount of sense, because effectively what we've said over here is that we get a balance out of the two stories of what the role of a Nasi is. So the role of a Nasi is always Yisnadvu. Let the people donate Mashem Yisnadvim what they can. Umashem Mechasim, whatever happens to be no longer in their possession, will fill in, because we have to first address their shlichus and then ours. Except that in this case, that's not an excuse. In this case, we're dealing with something which is of such vital importance to Judaism that speed is of essence, and therefore the Nasim can be criticized for being lazy. So that's all beautiful and makes sense, but a sharp student will have a question. How can we really say that the Nasim, so to speak, slipped up on this one? After all, who got the Jews moving? Yes, you're going to tell me that their contribution was not as essential as the Jews' contribution. It doesn't seem to make sense. The sharp student will say, why are we criticizing the Nasim that they were not necessarily there to the extent that they needed to be? After all, they're the ones who got everybody else to contribute. So every other contribution, they have a share in it. So they are there, surely, with everybody else contributing. Everything happened. Everything happened because of their power and their encouragement. How can we possibly consider it that they were in some way lacking in their contribution to the Mishkan if ultimately they were the ones who prompted the entire project? So in order to address that, Rashi alludes to an answer by telling us who taught this thing in Sifri. It was Rabbi Nosson. And Rabbi Nosson teaches us a principle that will help us to understand how it is possible that a person could be the catalyst for somebody else doing something and yet, according to Rabbi Nosson, not necessarily get the credit. One of the most famous halachic teachings of Rabbi Nosson, to the extent that it's actually named after him, it's the concept called Shibuddha de Rabbi Nosson, which basically means that a person, as we'll explain in a second, takes on the responsibility of somebody else's debt. So, b'mikre, she'ruven o bal choyv shel Shimon, v'Shimon chayev kesef le'levi. Let's say there's a scenario, Ruven owes Shimon money, and Shimon owes Levi money. So what do we do according to Shibuddha de Rabbi Nosson? As I mitzin mizeh Ruven v'noisin lezeh Levi, v'hayne sheruven poreh boifin yoshe lelevi. Instead of saying that Ruven must pay his creditor Shimon, and then Shimon pays his creditor Levi, Rabbi Nosson says Ruven just pay Levi directly. Assuming obviously that the amounts are the same. V'achidosh b'din zeh, sh'av sh'shay chusoy v'hischaivusa shel Ruven lelevi, bo b'emtso Shimon, it's a fascinating principle, halachically, just the logic of it. So basically, the only reason Reuven and Levi have anything to do with each other is only because they're both involved with Shimon. Reuven owes Shimon, and Shimon owes Levi. But Reuven and Levi, by rights, have no connection to each other. However, because of the fact that Shimon sits in the middle, Shimon creates a connection between them so that now Reuven becomes a debtor to Levi. In other words, we remove the middleman. We create, the middleman is the cause of their connection, and once their connection is established, the middleman is irrelevant now. Who's the middleman between the Jews and the Mishkan? The Nasiim. So the Nasiim is the ones, they're the ones who got it started, they're the ones who encouraged them to do it as quickly as possible, to everybody participate. The minute the connection has been made between the Jews and Hashem, between their contribution and the Mishkan, the Nasiim become invisible in the process. Like Shimon is invisible, now Reuven pays directly to Levi. The Nasiim become invisible, the Jews connect directly to Hashem by their contributions to the Mishkan. So there's now a shaychus viskashus beifin yosha beinom levein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki'ilu lo natlu anasim chelek bozeh. The direction, the connection is now direct between the Jews and Hashem, and the Nasiim no longer play a role, and they cannot claim credit for those contributions that the Jewish people made. Pisa Yashloimar Oid, which helps us to understand further, shezeh gufa hoyo yoseid haksal daitach shel anasim, that that is actually what the Nasiim thought. The Nasiim believed that because they were the catalyst, because they were the ones who encouraged the Jews to contribute to the Mishkan, they just assumed that that would mean they would share the schus of those contributions. Now we can understand the wording Rashi tells us, that their thinking was, let the people contribute what they will contribute, and whatever they lack, we will complete. That shows you that the Nasiim themselves were not entirely convinced that they would have to contribute. They thought it was quite possible that the Jews would contribute everything. If there's something lacking, then we'll contribute. How are they comfortable to say we may not contribute to the Mishkan? Because they believed that they didn't have to physically give things to the Mishkan in order to be considered part of the contribution. They thought that the fact that they get everybody else to contribute is good enough, and if there should be something lacking at the end and they can contribute, great, and if not, well, at least they were the ones who got everybody on board. But then the Nasiim, at the end of the story, see something which surprised them, that not only did the people bring forward their materials, but they also brought funds to cover whichever materials they were lacking, that the community fulfilled all of the responsibilities of contribution fully. That's when the Nasiim realized, actually, it might not be considered our participation because the people are self-motivated. They are completely independent of us. We got them going, and now they've gone off on their own, and we are no longer relevant to their process. And then they said, oi, ma'aleinu lasis, what do we do now? How do we get involved? They recognized that they had been a little bit lax in their approach. And that explains the last part of Rashi about the missing yud. Rashi tells us that because they were lax in their approach, therefore the yud was left out of their name in this pasuk. Because on the face of it, there doesn't seem to be any obvious link between being lax in their approach and not spelling their name in full. But we know, in a more plimistic way, according to Hasidus, that the letter Yud is the letter that represents Bittul. And if the Yud's not in their name, that implies that they were not as bottle as they should have been. And that's what caused them to be lax. What is it that exposed the fact that they should not have this Yud? That they didn't have enough bittul, nisatzlu. The fact that they were sluggish in their participation is in itself a sign that they didn't have the bittul that they should have had. Because they didn't have absolute bittul and they felt their position, we are the nesiim, we are the ones who have to encourage the people, so they should do their thing. That's what got them to think all of that contribution is actually our schus. We don't have to do anything else. We don't have to rush to the front lines to contribute because whatever they're doing is on us. And only if there's a lack, then we'll fill it in. Look what happened because of that slight sensitivity, because of that lack of bittul. Look what happened. They landed up losing the opportunity for equal status of contribution to the Mishkan.
To the point that it reached a stage that it was potentially possible to make a Mishkan and to bring the Shechina without the Nesiim. And all of that, why? Because their bittul wasn't as it should have been. And for a leader, bittul is absolutely critical.
That teaches us, like every other part of Torah, a personal lesson. Every one of us has a nasi within ourselves. It's the part of ourselves that is the ruler over our miniature city, as the Alter Rebbe calls it, our body. And each of us is a nasi who is supposed to have a positive impact on our immediate environment, other people, the world that we live in. So what's the lesson from these nasiim? If any one of us wants to ensure that our avodas Hashem is not lacking and that our Mishkan is whole, then we have to be sure that whatever influence we have on our own body, on the next person, on the world around us, all has to be guided by a sense of absolute bittul represented by that letter yud. It's like we have the fascinating halacha about a king that when it's time to daven, for us, we bow at certain points in the davening, then we straighten up. But it says when the king bows, he's not allowed to straighten up because in order to be the leader, he is the one who has to have the greatest bittul, the greatest submission to Hashem.
We should never get the perception in our heads that I am the channel, I am the catalyst. It's because of me that that person has a connection to Hashem.
When our leadership and influence over others is founded on a healthy sense of submission of bittul to Hashem, then we will definitely not ever make the mistake of thinking, well, I'm influencing other people, so I'm good.
We realize we always have to work on ourselves, like the Nesiim. While they're encouraging everybody to contribute, we're meant to be contributing on their own. While I'm being mashpi on somebody else, I have to be working on myself, learning more, and doing mitzvahs in a better way, with a sense of bittul commitment to Hashem, rather than my own self-aggrandizement. Look what an amazing shliach I am.
All of that opens the doorway for Mashiach, who represents the concept of Yud, which reflects Yechidah Shebe Nefesh, the deepest part of our soul, that has absolute bittul to Hashem. May Mashiach appear immediately and take us to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, not just to the Mishkan, but to the Beis Hamikdash HaShlishi and to the absolute revelation of Hashem's Shechina down here in this world. And we should be able to say we had a part to play in that.